The Tom Woods Show, episode 611.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm hosting a cruise with Bob Murphy in October 2016. It's the Contra Cruise, and we are going to have a blast. We're going to have so much fun on this thing. 30% of the cabins are already sold out, and we've only been promoting it about a month. So don't miss it. Check it out at ContraCruise.com. Folks, I got some great feedback about episode 610, in which I interviewed Sarah Young, the mom of seven who became a great online entrepreneur, because she didn't want to leave her kids and she had to work from home. Well, she's putting on a special webinar March 15th, 2016, just for Tom Woods Show listeners, in which she's going to show you exactly how she does it. Don't even think about missing it. Register at tomwoods.com/Sarah. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Here's one of these episodes that I think is maybe one of the reasons you listen to the show. And I'm just glad that because the show has been around for so long, it's sort of a magnet for people who have interesting things to talk about. One way or another, I find out about them. And I am so glad to be talking to Patrick Riesenover today. He's the co-founder of an organization that I found out about, and I'll probably bring this up with him, from Michael Malice. And remember Michael Malice, how could you forget, a frequent guest of the show, great guy, smart guy, terrible debater, of course, but a wonderful human being. And he was MC of this organization, Taliesin Nexus, that we're going to talk about today. And he came back singing its praises, that this is such a wonderful organization. And he said, you've got to have somebody on from it. So, okay, well, what's it all about? Well, here's an exact quotation. In order to encourage the creation of great stories, we serve as a nexus between up-and-coming filmmakers and experienced industry professionals who share a passion for a free society. So here we go. This is very important stuff because libertarians have not been doing a very good job in terms of the culture. But now here's an organization stepping in to fill that void. You can find out about them at talnexus.com. That's TALNEXUS.com. And we're talking right now to its co-founder, Patrick Riesenover. Patrick, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
I want you to tell me all about your organization in 60 seconds, or at least tell me what the aim of it is, and then I want to talk about Michael Malice for a minute.
Okay, fantastic. I'll do the best I can. Our organization is called Taliesin Nexus. What we do is if you are interested and passionate about the ideas of liberty, free markets, and individual rights, and you want to work in entertainment, you're a storyteller or filmmaker, we have programs to help you do that. We have workshops, internships, a film lab for prospective fiction writers, narrative nonfiction writers, screenwriters, producers, directors, folks who want to work in the entertainment businesses and are interested in storytelling.
Now, that is obviously very important. I'll hold off on poor Michael Malice for a minute, but that's very important because you know, libertarians just generally haven't been all that good at this stuff. And either we're not doing it at all. I mean, you know, we're great at producing economists, and there's nothing wrong with that. We need economists. And we're great at producing papers on a lot of subjects. But when it comes to this, either we are just not in the game, or it's terrible. And people think it's enough that it's a libertarian movie, so you should go out and like it. And I have seen people, I can't mention names, who have produced libertarian material of this sort, and then they come to me and they want me to promote it on my show, and it puts me in a very awkward position because I don't want to have to say, to quote the name of a Roger Ebert book, your movie sucks. You know, I mean, I don't want to have to say. And he wrote a whole book called that. That is a whole book by Roger Ebert. You know, it's too, and the same thing as I've said before, same thing goes for so-called Christian movies. They think, well, the Christians will come out and see it because it's a Christian movie. But it's a lot of sentimental schlock. Like, right. Why does – because it's a Christian – part of the reason that regular movies, I think, do well is that they just set out to be movies. They don't set out to be a libertarian movie, a Christian – they just set out to be a good movie. And unfortunately, we just haven't got that.
That's right, and I think there's two key reasons. One, making a film is a collaborative art. It's not something like writing a novel where you can just sit down in front of your computer and do it by yourself. And it's also, it's a business. And so it's complicated. And what you really need are people who, you know, are experienced and know what they're doing and have produced movies before and written scripts and had them produced and, you know, and who know all elements of the ball game. And so I think whereas in the public policy space and, you know, in academia, there's a lot of resources and, you know, and there's a network there for people to go and pursue that career and have people help them and guide them. You know, this is the right way to go about writing a policy paper. In the entertainment space, we just haven't had the network. And so our organization is devoted to building that and making it a resource for folks who want to come in so they can get the experienced folks who share the ideas and can help make a great product. The second reason I think that these movies tend to suck is people go about trying to make a libertarian movie or a Christian movie per se, rather than, you know, if you look at it from a public policy standpoint, you're working on a white paper or an academic paper, you know, you don't set about saying, well, how can I want to get libertarian ideas in here, so I'll write a paper as a vehicle to get libertarian ideas out. Like, rather, the honest scholar is pursuing truth, you know, in that form, and they're doing their absolute best, you know, be it an empirical study or, you know, from an analytical standpoint, you know, examining reason and logic, you know, they're letting truth be their guide. And I think that's a big failing when people try to make a libertarian or a conservative or Christian film. You know, if you hold those values and those ideas and you are intellectually honest, they're going to come through. You know, you really just need to concentrate on making a movie that, if it's a horror, it scares people. If it's a comedy, they're laughing. And, you know, if it's a thriller, they're on the edge of their seat. That's the number one thing when you're making a movie. You know, it's who's my audience and what do they want to watch? And I want to entertain them. And you just have to really trust your instincts and, you know, and work with people who are experienced to help you understand, you know, how the values come through. That's really, you know, that's the second part of it, you know. And I think too often folks enter into making a movie as a vehicle to get their ideas out there. And that's not going to create great movies. That's going to create propaganda. That's the opposite of what we want.
Can you explain to me the meaning behind the name of your organization?
Sure. Taliesin is the name of a 4th century Welsh bard, apocryphally known as the father of storytelling. He's also apocryphally known as the father of Merlin the Wizard. So we have storytelling, magic. Basically, movie magic and storytelling. So Taliesin is kind of our kind of a founding father in that sense. If you look on our programs, you'll see that we have, you know, the Odysseus Fellowship and the Apollo Workshop for Film and Television.
Now it makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because we want to, you know, create a new tradition, you know, rather than having it be the Hayek this or the Mises that or the Rand this, you know, we want to hark back to, you know, what's at the base of storytelling, you know, which is myth and epic tales. What's kind of fundamental to human nature. And we want folks who are interested in creating content that has the ideas in there, but are great stories, to kind of hark back to those models and that type of thinking as a place to generate, you know, to be your muse, you know, to generate the great stories that we know that they can tell.
Now, even though I said that a lot of times the trouble with people who want to make ideological movies making a statement is that they're kind of defeating the purpose of entertainment, because people don't really want to be bashed over the head with a really, really obvious message. At the same time, it is obvious that plenty of movies coming out of Hollywood have a message embedded in them, and it's generally a leftist kind of message. Now, in what you're doing, I suppose you are very alert to this, and you note that there are certain leftist ideas that do slip into entertainment. And you must, at some level, think about what alternatives would be. So the left produces such and such type movie. What's a movie that we could produce in response? Is that the way you think sometimes?
Actually, no. I mean, yes and no. You know, on the one hand, I'm not the sort who kind of thinks that Hollywood is nefarious or that they're, you know, they're plotting some, you know, total social change agenda. I think that, you know, it just so happens that there's a lot of people who work in Hollywood who share those values. And while some may be, you know, trying to stick messages in, I mean, I think that when they take that approach, often the movie fails. You know, it doesn't hit a wide audience, because in the same way that a libertarian would try to make a libertarian movie, if a progressive tries to make a progressive movie, we don't tend to see those do well at the box office because people don't like that. You know, they want, I think that's the wrong way to go about expressing the ideas, you know, trying to put an analytical argument or something in the movie, because when you encounter that in a movie, it rips you out. You know, I want an immersive experience so I can follow characters and, you know, go along with them on their journey. I don't want to have to hit pause on that and then, you know, do a logical argument in my head after I hear some position said.
Right.
You know, and I think like the best movies, even from someone coming from a progressive background, is when they're intellectually honest and they're trying to express what they truly believe about the world in their narratives. And I think that the solution isn't necessarily to say, okay, you know, let's come out with another film that like attacks that the argument of that film. I think the solution is more that we simply support and help more people who share, you know, or have passion for the ideas like we do, you know, pursue their career. And then if they proceed, you know, intellectually, honestly, and are led by their muse and imagination, they're going to create great works that people will be drawn to. And so we don't need to like get in a fight, you know, as you might in a debate, in a kind of like an analytical or an empirical state. You know, we're in the realm of the imagination and narrative. And so, you know, it's really just, you know, what's most compelling. You know, you can look at two films and what's most compelling, what speaks to you. And if we're right about our ideas, which I think we are, then I think that our ideas, you know, shown in that way will speak to people and they'll be drawn to it and want to consume it, you know, which is what we want. We want content that people want to consume, that moves them and, you know, opens their eyes to different perspectives and experiences.
Now, of course, I wouldn't support something as crude as coming out with an express reply to another movie, but there are themes, or let's say a lot of times there are simply omissions that come out of Hollywood that are just crying out to be addressed. So, for instance, I was just talking to Lou Rockwell about this, that the number of movies I can think of that deal with the crimes of communism, I mean, we're talking about potentially 100 million deaths, depending on how you count it, I can count on one hand. I know The Killing Fields in Cambodia.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
But I really don't know a whole lot. Yeah, I mean, there's just almost nothing about that. So you have a whole generation of kids who, given that they don't learn much in school, they know nothing about what occurred. And there are some things in history that people will say it would be terrible if people were not educated about such and such occurrence. No one seems to think that way about the crimes of communism. Nothing's done about that. I would love to – I mean, could you imagine the movies that could be made about this on so many levels, so many fascinating characters, so many extraordinary events, and yet nothing, absolute silence? I would like to see somebody fill that particular gap.
I think that – you know, part of our mission, our organization, what we're trying to do is, you know, identify filmmakers who, you know, share the ideas and they're going to learn, you know, how to actually, you know, produce great content that's entertaining. And so what you'll find, just as we find in the public policy space where, you know, great minds once trained in the art go and discover new things about liberty and economics and human nature, we'll see that same approach happen as we build talent in the entertainment space. You know, there's one film which I think would just be fantastic. One of our filmmakers who participated in our programs he produced a great short, and I know he's interested in doing a feature. I'll send it your way, but it details how Stalin starved out the Ukrainians. And it's basically a horror story where, you know, you have people, you know, in the Ukraine. And, you know, they're producing the wheat. It goes away. The train comes in. They have bread. And then suddenly the train stopped coming. And they don't have an explanation for why. And then they just literally start starving to death. And, you know, and I think there's, you know, there's novels that detail this, these kinds of things. And, you know, I think framed as a horror story, yet true, is really sexy, interesting. I mean, it's not sexy. It's very sad.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Terrible, but it's like it's something that would garner the attention of the public. You know, it's put in a framework that they would want to consume. And so I definitely think that, you know, as we see more folks moving into the space who are talented in the art and they develop it, those stories will be told. And they definitely need to be, because we have, you know, we have candidates running who are talking about socialism as though it's great, you know, and young people listening to them, which, you know, just do not have, they do not have a context for the history. They don't know anything about it. Maybe they're not willing to read and learn about the history, but hopefully that's a role that we can play in the popular culture by investing in talent and getting people who can develop those movie ideas so that, you know, younger generation that's maybe not willing to delve as deeply into the history of the ideas can consume something like that and have their eyes opened.
All right, suppose I'm an aspiring filmmaker and I've got an idea and I come to you. What can you do for me? Or let me ask also this, what would I need to have already before you could do anything for me?
Well, what I'll do is kind of chart a path for how a filmmaker can proceed through our organization and our programs. I mean, first off, you know, you got to look at who you are and, you know, your background and, you know, and what you're bringing to the table. You know, like I mentioned earlier, film's a collaborative art. So you don't need to be a great producer and a great screenwriter and a great director. Most likely what you're going to want to do is learn about the industry, pick out areas, something that you're drawn to, be that cinematography or editing, you know, or writing. And then you can apply to our Apollo Film and Television Workshop. And when you get there, you can pitch your idea and you'll be pitching your idea to entertainment industry pros who can give you instant feedback. You know, they're pitching every day to production companies and studios, and they can give you feedback, but then give you critical feedback, but then also help you by giving you suggestions because they're screenwriters. And so they can help you shape your idea. The other thing that you get at our workshop is, you know, we have 24 participants and we have 24 faculty because the network is very important when you're in the entertainment space. And so, you know, what we would want, you know, young filmmakers to do is they come in, is, you know, pitch your idea, get feedback, develop it, you know, share your, you know, your ideas with everyone. Don't be afraid someone's going to steal your killer idea. The chances of you having a killer idea that someone would want to steal is pretty low. You know, everybody, you think you have a great idea. So does everybody else. And they're interested in their own idea, not yours usually. And the way ideas get better in a collaborative art is through collaboration. So you share, work with other people, you know, build your network, learn from those who have gone before and know what's happening in the industry today. And then we can help you plan your career, you know, so you can make good decisions as to what you need to be doing in the space. Then the next step is we have an internship program where you can, we have a paid internship program where you can intern at, you know, production companies out here, studios. The interns, we usually try to make it targeted to your interests. So once you kind of know the direction that you're interested in heading in, your internship is going to reflect that. And then the next step in the process is we have a film lab where you you apply with a partner with a treatment for a short film narrative, not doc. So it would be comedy, drama, thriller, sci-fi in that vein that explores the ideas of liberty. And if selected, the team will get a roughly $10,000 grant. They'll have an opportunity to you know, develop out a script and a budget that we potentially would invest more, up to about $15,000. And they can go and over about 100 and 120 day period, make a great short film. They can be a calling card for you as a director or a writer. That can be something that you can put in front of financiers or a feature film. Ultimately, it's an experience that helps you understand completely how the industry works and, you know, and get the opportunity to work on a project. But kind of the most important element of that program is that we have a mentor who can work with you, who's a professional screenwriter that's been in the business for years, or a professional producer or director who's been in the business for years, worked on many films. And our mentors give notes on all of the script drafts. They help them, mentor them through production, pre-production, lining up your talent, and also give notes on the post-production, like when the film is being cut. We then screen those films in Los Angeles, New York. We just came back from the New York screening, actually, San Francisco and Washington, D.C. And then our filmmakers, it's very important to us because we support creatives. They own the content 100%. So if they choose to go and, you know, pursue a feature film or choose to you know, contact a College Humor or a Funny or Die or else to, you know, to get it, you know, out there through those vehicles, then that's wonderful. If not, then we help them push the film out. And that includes like a stipend for, you know, submitting to film festivals and that sort of thing. So, you know, so big picture, if you're a young filmmaker and you're interested in the business, you know, I would just suggest applying to, you know, our workshop. It's our first, you know, tier in our programs, and we'd love to, you know, we'd love to connect with you.
Well, this is very exciting. I didn't know about your organization, even though I knew you a little bit. I didn't know about your organization until Michael Malice came back from having apparently emceed a recent event for you in January, and he just could not say enough about what a great organization it was. So that put it on my radar, and I said, we got to talk to you about it. I wonder if you can, given that Michael's been a controversial guest on the show, he's a regular guest, and he and I had a big debate in New York City about Alexander Hamilton that was a lot of fun. Anything about working with Michael Malice you can tell me about?
Yeah, well, Michael was great. He came out and emceed the LA premiere of our short films this year. So it was a wonderful event. We had about 200 people there. And we screened several films and, you know, and he kind of opened the show. And I think Michael and I really, you know, where we kind of really saw, we both mutually agreed is the kind of mantra of our organization, which is something that Andrew Breitbart once said. It's that politics is downstream of culture. And so, you know, for generations, decades, you know, Friends of Liberty have invested in, you know, in policy papers and books and nonprofit organizations to do policy in, you know, in programs for journalism, you know, programs for academia to support professors who are interested in examining these ideas, you know, at the university setting, but have not invested in the culture. And my view is that what we see is that, and it's part of a frustration, I know, is that these downstream efforts are being washed out by an upstream cultural engine that, you know, largely is the antithesis of those ideas. And so by the time, you know, we get downstream, we're just not seeing those policies and those ideas being effective. And so part of what, you know, our organization wants to do is to, you know, give filmmakers who share our passion for these ideas an opportunity to explore them, you know, challenge them in a narrative setting. And that as we see more and more of this, they will put wind in the sails of the folks who are operating and doing great work in the public policy sphere. They suddenly won't have to fight against the culture. They'll have allies there. And so they'll be able to point to, you know, to narratives that are compelling. Let me give you an example. So the film Dallas Buyers Club. Now, I don't know who was behind that or what ideas they had, but this is a film starring Matthew McConaughey where we see how the FDA and the FDA's rules are preventing, you know, Michael McConaughey, who's this entrepreneur who's getting these drugs, you know, AIDS drugs from Mexico for his own use because he gets AIDS and he, you know, and he's, you know, he doesn't necessarily like, you know, the homosexual community, you know, where this is a problem. He's not a part of that. You know, but he kind of sees a business opportunity. Like, I need these drugs. These people need these drugs. And we see how a market need brings this guy who's kind of a bigot against homosexuals to then, you know, see like, hey, they're, you know, these people are people like me and they have this need. And the FDA is cracking down, you know, on him and his business and trying to prevent him from selling these drugs to people who want them. And so at the Goldwater Institute, they have a right to try piece of legislation, which basically says if you have a terminal illness, you have a right to try a drug that could potentially save you. And the state is a state law, and the state will protect you, you know, against the federal government where an FDA is barring you to use it, you know. And so what they actually found is that as they were, you know, marketing this, you know, this bill and this change, that people were kind of just adopting it. Oh, this is the Dallas Buyers Club bill, because that was a way for them to instantly understand it, you know, and they instantly, you know, know the things that the characters were going through in that movie. You know, it's wrong when, you know, you're facing a terminal illness and you can't get drugs that could potentially help you. Maybe they won't help you, but, you know, you want to try. And so that's a great example where we can see the culture putting wind in the sails of people doing policy work that that frees people. And so that's ultimately how I think Michael and I connected, just over that idea that politics is downstream of culture. And I know in his work, for instance, his book on North Korean leader, that's very much in his mind too.
Can you tell me about any other short films that stand out to you that you guys have had a hand in?
Absolutely. We our program is entering its third year, so we've had 11 short films that have been produced so far, and this year we plan to do 12. So we're doubling the size of it. But the filmmakers in our program have just done a great job. One of the films was one of the directors is Daniel Hanna, and it's called Shelter. Stars Clea DuVall, and you know, it's kind of one that you would look at perhaps and watch and think, maybe this, you know, where is the liberty here? You know, if you're looking for like someone to be having an argument in the middle of the film. But we really feel that it, you know, there it's a great thematic approach where in it you have a woman, Clea DuVall, who, you know, there was a drunken disorderly and she, you know, bit a cop. And then she, you know, wound up with a felony, and she's on work release when we enter the short film. And we see that she goes to this dog shelter. And at the dog shelter, you know, her eyes are kind of open to there's this tierage. You know, there's the unadoptable dogs, and then there's the dogs upstairs that they adopt away. And the unadoptable dogs, they just kill. And so she develops a relationship with this, you know, scarred up, you know, little black dog. And, you know, I won't ruin the end of it. But, you know, basically she's sort of faced with this dilemma of, well, do I help this dog escape? And then what does that mean for me? You know, in the cinematography, you know, that's we see the dog behind bars. Then we see the camera from the other side with her behind bars. And, you know, what we were kind of going for with the film is just to highlight, you know, the criminal justice reform that is needed, where we have folks who, you know, have a drug you know, a felony for possession, and then they're not able to get a job. There's, you know, when they get out, they've done their time, they're not able to kind of re-enter the economy. And so in this film, we're kind of making that point through the connection to, you know, what's going on in animal shelters. And so it's a great film, and it I'll have to let you know how to see it. A lot of the films are on the film festival circuit and haven't been released yet. So what I can do for your listeners and for you is send you some links to the films that are available now, and you can check them out. And I 100% Tom would want you to watch these films, and I would hope that you would feel proud to show them and not embarrassed.
Right.
As a libertarian film that you feel obligated to share, because I absolutely, you know, take your point and think that that's something that we shouldn't do. My view is we should not share films because they're libertarian, because we feel, you know, an obligation. We should share films because they're good, you know, and that's it. And so we'll make these available to you and your listeners, and I hope they'll enjoy them.
Well, I'll put them up on the show notes page, which for today is tomwoods.com/611. So that's where people will be able to find them. I also want to put your website up there. Tell us what it is, because I have a feeling after listening to you, some people are going to want to contact you.
Absolutely. Our web address is talnexus.com. So that's talnexus.com. And our organization is Taliesin Nexus.
Okay, so that's what we'll do there. We'll get all that information up at tomwoods.com/611. Can I ask you something? It's not totally off topic, but it's off your organization just a little bit. Just before we go, I wonder if you'd be willing to give your frank and honest appraisal of, and I don't know if you know what's coming, the Atlas Shrugged movies.
Well, I will be willing to say this. I think that, you know, that is a tough novel. That's a really tough novel to to bring to life in one film, much less three films. And also, from what I know about the nature of the production, it had an incredibly tight timeline. And so, you know, when you're dealing with issues like that, it's very, very tough, you know. And I don't even, you know, I've talked to, you know, screenwriters out here who admire Ayn Rand and, you know, had said, if those producers had come to me, I would have flat out told them no. Like, I don't even see how it's possible that we could make a film of that book. So I think, like, you know, the really true vehicle for how that book should be made is a miniseries, like a Netflix show, you know, a Breaking Bad, where, you know, you have a long arc, you know, for your drama, and there's so many stories in there, and it's really difficult to cut them. I mean, you know, one of my favorites is Ragnar Danishold, who I'm sure would be the first on the chopping block as what's going to be cut, in making that movie, or making that book into a movie. So, I think, and I hope, and I hear that the plans are to pursue that as a long form television show, which I think would be terrific. The other thing that I would say, and I think this is probably a budget consideration, but, you know, what I really think is kind of magical about that book is it's set in this America that never was, where it's like the 1940s or 50s, and yet people are taking passenger trains around. You know, it's really like a science fiction dystopian film. And so one of the things that I hope in a future iteration of it is that, you know, the filmmakers really buy into that, you know, and just go into it and don't make Atlas Shrugged in the modern day world. Make it in, you know, this science fiction world, you know, like that it is. It's true to the novel. I think that would make it so much more powerful because it takes people out of, you know, our modern debates. And I think, like, you know, one of the powers of storytelling is, you know, when you tell a story, people suspend disbelief. You know, so if I'm telling you a ghost story, when the ghost appears, you don't say, that's irrational, illogical, there can't be ghosts. You know, this movie makes no logical sense and therefore I'm not going to watch it. You know, you just buy in and say, okay, there are ghosts in this world, you know? And I think, like, you know, putting Atlas Shrugged together in a world of its own will allow, you know, viewers, just like readers can do, to suspend disbelief, go along on the ride, consume this new world, you know, and they'll draw the conclusions that are there. You know, we don't need to, you know, set it in a modern context and hit them over the head with it. You know, I think we have to trust audiences. You know, just as Ayn Rand in writing her novel trusted audiences. You know, you're going to read this and, you know, you're going to enjoy it. And there are themes and ideas in there. And, you know, and as you consume it, you'll think about them. You know, and I think that's the approach.
All right. I definitely want people to check out talnexus.com. What I love about the world these days, you know, there's a lot not to like about it. But one thing to like about it is that there's this great organization like this that's around that I didn't know about. Whereas in 1972, let's say, I pretty much would have known every libertarian thing in the world because there would have been five of them and I would have figured them all out. But I'm so glad you're out there and that there's still more for me to discover in the world and to share with the audience. And I'm sure everybody enjoyed getting to hear about all the great things that you're doing. And I hope they'll check you out. We'll put all the links up at tomwoods.com/611. Best of luck, Patrick, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Absolutely appreciate the opportunity to come on your show and to let more people know about what we're doing.
All right, everybody, before you go, I got something I got to get off my chest. Before I do that, let me just remind you, tomwoods.com/611. Go there. If anything we said today is of interest to you, go there. And it'll all be there. All right, I want to tell you about something I've been listening to. Now, I know some of you are going to want to turn this off. I know you're going to turn it off. Please don't break my heart. Just listen. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, okay? Just a couple. All right? Okay. I know that some people who listen to the show have different musical tastes from my own. And don't try to protest and say that I'm getting it wrong. That is correct. I can see the download figures for the episodes for myself. And I know the music episodes are not your favorite. Okay, that's all right. That's all right. You know, I can't win them all. I can persuade some of you of some things, but maybe I can't persuade you of all things. That's all right. However, there's a guy named Steven Wilson who is extremely talented. I haven't always liked his solo work. I liked his work with a band called Porcupine Tree. I saw them as an opening act for Yes years and years ago, and I found them really compelling. Well, anyway, his most recent album is called Hand Cannot Erase, and it's loosely based on the life of a woman named Joyce Carol Vincent, who lived in London. She died in late 2003. Nobody noticed that she died for over 2 years. And as Stephen Wilson has been saying in interviews, you're inclined to think, oh, this must be a bag lady that nobody knew. To the contrary, she was an attractive young woman who had family and friends. And somehow, nobody noticed she was gone for over 2 years. And she died living in London. And Wilson says, you know, this may seem counterintuitive that you would go to London to, in effect, erase yourself. But think about it. You couldn't do this in a small town. You couldn't just vanish from sight in a small town. But the paradox is that in the big city, you're surrounded by people, but yet that's precisely how you can melt away. And in the fictionalized version of the story, I mean, it's loosely based on Joyce Carol Vincent, but in Wilson's version, his character is making this deliberate decision to, in effect, erase herself. And she makes a deliberate decision to move to London and to do this there. And it's just – anyway, so I listened to this album when it came out, and I just didn't – I didn't like it. I thought there's nothing here. It's boring, or it's cacophonous or whatever. I just couldn't get anything out of it. But then recently I said, doggone it, I am going to find what everybody seems to like here, because the average – review on Amazon is 5 stars. Average review, 5 stars. I got to see what people are seeing. I finally saw it. This thing is unbelievable. Just blows me away. The intensity of it, the beauty of it, the complexity of it. It's overwhelming. It's so good. So I'm going to give this baby away. I'm giving this away as a free surprise gift for the supporting listeners. You got to be... Yeah, let's say you got to be silver or above as a supporting listener, and I'll give you this thing for nothing, as just a surprise gift. Probably, I mean, I'm inclined to give it to you as an MP3 download that I'll order for you from Amazon. If you absolutely have to have the hard copy, ask me, and I'll give you that. But if you are one of those supporting listeners, I want you to just write to me at tomwoods.com on the contact page. Give me your address. Tell me you want it, and I'll send it to you. If you're not yet a supporting listener at one of those levels and you want to become one, get this thing as a bonus, then you can do that as long as you write to me by March 15th, 2016. I ain't doing this no more after that, but I'm going to send this out to you. Now, especially those of you who are in other countries, I'm inclined to send you the MP3 download. I'll order it. I'll buy it for you from Amazon and you get it and listen to it. Now, it's going to take you a little while to get into, or at least it took me a little while. It won't – not all of it's going to jump out at you the first time, but just wait. You're going to find these beautiful passages. And anyway, if I'm wrong about this and you didn't like it, well, you know, how much did you pay, right? But if you do like it, then maybe I've made your life a little bit better. And I think this is the kind of thing that makes your life better, even though it's incredibly depressing. It's a really depressing story. But Stephen Wilson's view, he says, you know, I think sad music is sometimes the most beautiful music of all. And he says, and to the contrary, happy music that's supposed to make me happy makes me miserable. So anyway, that's his philosophy. So there you go, supportinglisteners.com if you want to check that out. I'll have this offer also on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/611. All right, tomorrow, if all goes well, we're going to be talking to Peter Schiff, and I will be asking the questions that you folks in my private Facebook group asked. I'm going to ask him as many of those as I can. So lots of fun coming up, and thanks for listening today. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.